Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Power Panel. Guess who's on? Can you tell by how angry I already am? It's Brett Ehrlich. Hey, Brett, welcome to the Damage Report.
I am so excited to be here today, John. Don't let John's attitude fool you as an audience. He's loving having me on. Yes, mm-hmm. I just got the camera to work like 92 seconds ago, and we're about 35 seconds into this show.
Yes.
But I'm here for you, John.
Your shot looks nice and bright now. It looks a little bit different.
Yeah, this is John's camera. So every time it's perfect, thank John. And every time it acts up, blame John. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, everybody, thank you for being here. Friday is the day, of course, where we throw away the trash. And we do have some trash indeed for you. So much so that we can't wait until our last segment for it. We're going to be starting off with some other trash, actually. And that's just the beginning of a big old packed day here at the TYT Network, because of course, coming up after our show, we've got Indisputable with Dr. Rashad Richie. It looks like Nalini Stamp is gonna be joining Rashad for that show. We've got Galaxy Brain, we've got the Power Panel with the appearance of a congressperson in the first hour. So that'll be cool. And then Brett, what exciting thing is coming up after the main show?
After main show, it's Game Busters, where we're either playing Fortnite or some weird new version of Squid Game. I don't remember. And what? I don't know if I'm involved because I wasn't listening.
I am told we were going to be doing some sort of charity stream on Fortnite together.
Charity stream on Fortnite. John, why do you ask these questions when you know the answer? This isn't a trial. If you know the answer, just say it.
Why do you tee up a ball? Why do you do that? Anyway.
Yeah, you're right. I'm wrong.
I think this is enough of the show today. I think we're good.
Okay.
I think we did everything. I was told it was for charity. Don't yell at me. Anyway. Oh, we're the charity. Okay. Well, that's not charity then, is it? Anyway. Yeah, I went to Starbucks once and bought a coffee for charity of theirs. Anyway. Okay. So anyway, everybody, we've got a lot planned for
today. No, I'm not going to let this go because no one forgets what they agreed to more than John Iderola. I'm going to widen this so I can see Sophie's face. I'm pretty sure that she's shaking it off.
Hold on.
Nobody agrees to stuff and then goes, wait, what? That's happening more than you do, sir. Period. John read part of the email, Iderola. John, I got a verbal yes, but now it's a no.
Similar scheme to the fundraiser shows up. One can imagine why I was confused by that. But anyway, there's news going on and we're gonna get to it. So everybody out there, if you'd like to do the role that you're supposed to do, I get that I'm not and Brett damn sure isn't going to, but if you'd like to do what you're supposed to do, you can hit the like button, share the stream. That would be great. And with that, we're gonna move on to stuff. We'll talk more about this during the breaks, okay, Brett? Can we postpone until then? I'm not the villain. Joe Manchin is the villain, as you'll see.
This is Joe Manchin's car slowly pressing into our peaceful protesters. Joe Manchin's car slowly pressing into our peaceful protesters.
And there you have it. Joe Manchin, coal baron. Representative, as much as a representative can be when Baron is in their other job title, found himself delayed from leaving a parking garage when a number of different protesters, including those coming from the Hunger Strike for Climate Justice group, decided to block the path of his Maserati. I know, sort of anecdotally, that Maseratis are not cheap cars, but thankfully Nina Turner posted that the base price for a Maserati Levante is $79,000, which works out to slightly more than 3 years of the median annual income in West Virginia. The price of that Maserati was news to me. If he saw that tweet, what his constituents make would certainly be news to Joe Manchin, but he would move on from it very quickly, I'm sure. Brett, I don't know. I don't always know exactly how you're going to come down on some of these protests. This was not in a bathroom. Let's be very clear about that. He was not driving out of the bathroom. So what do you think about this climate protest there?
What a moderate Maserati driving, Cole Barron. That's what I always think about moderates. When I'm like, what's the middle of the road in America? And when your car's price is three times plus the median income for someone that you represent, you gotta be kidding me. If I had Joe Manchin money, the guy's so rich, so elitist, his last name is Manchin. That is the biggest lie of our time, besides like the big lie of stealing the election. The big lie that the media insists on telling people is that Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin are moderates. No moderate can afford to drive a Maserati. And it is basically, he is relieving himself on the media by having the gall to gallivant about in a Maserati as they're ignoring King Triton's Maserati logo on the front of his car.
Yeah.
That's insane to me. And I think the protest is fine. I think by and large, if you're out there chanting, we want to live, like get a new chant. Like I think you can do a better chant than that. I just don't think, and this is just politically speaking, I don't think that I've said this on your show before, like you got to find a more immediate way to appeal to people. You know, you can shout all you want at a slowly boiling frog, but the frog's like, no, this feels pretty good, man.
I like that new spin on that old metaphor. I agree about the moderate thing. I every once in a while I will tweet at like the New York Times to ask them to literally ever define what they mean when they use that term, or ask the editors how they came to the decision to use that term. And of course, it's not going to happen. He drives around in a Maserati. He lives in a yacht. Now, granted, there are more expensive cars than Maseratis. That is true. I'm just going to read. I don't know much about Maseratis. I just found this tweet to be funny. But Uri Alex tweeted, 80 grand for a car with interior panel gaps so big a tube of toothpaste will fit between them. The perfect overpriced garbage toy for the overpriced garbage toy of Big Oil. If you own a Maserati, don't at me. I have no idea if that's accurate. I just find it to be funny. But he drives his Maserati to take him back to the yacht he lives on. When he's not using his Maserati, does he get in like a gilded like Zeppelin? It just bothers me so much that we don't care about the obvious gap between us and them, the ones that we choose to represent us, that we think reasonably, the guy in the yacht who owns the coal company, he's the guy that should represent us. And if you live in Virginia, the guy with $440 million who worked for the Carlyle Group, he's the guy that will drain the swamp. What is wrong with us that we still think that they could have anything in common with us, that they could understand our pain, that he has any idea what it's like to make $25,000 a year in West Virginia?
But you know what?
10 seconds.
You ask Jim Carville, he say nobody knows the people of West Virginia quite like Joe Manchin knows people of West Virginia. Yeah, because he's got a bird's eye view of them from his ivory tower.
Yeah.
They look like ants to him. And because they're covered in coal coming out of one of his mines.
Exactly. And by the way, from that coal company, he has made $500,000, apparently just in 2020, in stock dividends. So I'm sure that when he enters into good faith negotiations, please everyone stop using good faith because nobody has it. When he enters into good faith negotiations around whether we should incentivize clean energy, he's not at all thinking about the $500,000 he made just in stock dividends in 1 year. And again, we go into it, we elect these people, and we expect that they won't be, biased by the fact that he has a $5 million stake in a coal company. It's just, It's amazing what we allow. Now that said, right. He has faced other protests actually on that same day. The protesters were waiting not just for his car, but also when he got off of his yacht, and you can see a little bit of that here. So unfortunately for Brett, it's the same chant. I know it's not gonna be persuasive. And look, obviously, like, Manchin doesn't care. I think that what they're doing is great. I think we'll talk more about those individual protesters. They're doing one of the only things that they can do, and the sorts of things that at least hypothetically are supposed to be able to influence people in a representative democracy, particularly when the policies that they're advocating for are wildly popular, including in his state. But that said, we have moved far past that as a state, as a government. Like, that he doesn't care. He's not worried about losing his seat. He's sure that the money he has will buy him re-election. And even if it doesn't, he'll just go and sit on some corporate boards and make even more money than he does now. So I don't know. Other than revising the chant, I'm not sure what they're supposed to do, but I am glad that they're trying something, that some people care about the future.
Yeah, I think it's good. I think people should be hounding him all the time. I think they should hound him about his refusal to, give people stuff that will improve their daily lives. Like, one of Manchin's catchphrases is, if I can't explain it, I'm not going to vote for it. Okay. Mm-hmm. Then you've got some explaining to do about how you're not voting for it. You've got to explain to me why you're against paid family leave, which is supported by over 80% of Americans. You got to explain to me why you don't want Medicare to negotiate drugs prices. This amounts, by the way, to a tax on people for being old. The government has the opportunity to start a policy that will lower how much people pay for prescription drugs. By failing to do that, they're raising the price of prescription drugs on people for being elderly. That's a government decision that makes people's lives more expensive. This is the most sickening, pathetic thing. And he can't explain why he is against family values, because he doesn't want people to hang out with their kids when the kids are born. He's against the family, all the Republicans against the family, because they don't want people to be able to spend time with their kids when they're born. Okay, that's one. The other one is they want to tax the elderly for surviving this long by keeping Medicare drug prices artificially high. Something other countries that we're way better than, because we're America, damn it, they're doing better than us. Mm-hmm. He can't explain it, and he won't explain it. I've got an explanation for it. I can explain it very easily. He's a coal baron. Yep. He'd rather poison people and make enough money to buy a Maserati. He can't explain any of this. And worse, the media allows him to go on without an explanation. They just copy paste the word moderate because they saw it before.
Yeah, no, 100%. And he not only you're totally right. He can't explain it. He also never has to. Like, and why would we expect that the media would throw the polls showing that everything he says about this negotiation is wrong, about the policies, about his own constituents' willingness to tax the rich and corporations to pay for it? Why would we expect that they would throw that in his face when they won't even consider it on their own when they're covering election returns and speculating about what people want? They don't go to the polls. CNN doesn't go to its own polls to get that information. All of it's hypothetical because they want to come to certain conclusions. Their motivation is exactly the same as Manchin. They have goals. They aren't as clear as a network like TYT about what it is that they want, but they damn sure want something, and they're going to advocate for it in the way that they can. Manchin says we have an entitlement mentality. He drives his Maserati to his yacht, and you have an entitlement mentality. He blocks you from getting a voucher for dental care. Has he ever had to choose which tooth to save? I sort of doubt it. He feels entitled to his teeth and to his Italian sports car and to his houseboat that he lives on. It's insane. Now, I do want to let you know just really fast, because those protesters are doing good work. So John Paul Mejia, who's going to be joining us in a couple weeks, actually, it turns out, which is pretty awesome. says leading the group are five young people with hunger strike who didn't eat for 2 weeks in a bold effort to get POTUS's attention and demand that he stop negotiating away his climate promises to politicians like Manchin, who are brought out or bought out by fossil fuel corporations. Yeah, they went 14 days, these individuals, as young as 18, as old as 24. I cannot conceive of that. That is,
as someone who was once that age, I was hungry all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, I was never not hungry. It is more difficult at that age, I think, than now to do that kind of stuff. So that's great. That's the right thing to be doing. It is, regardless of, I mean, it should be enough. Dayenu, it would have been enough for it just to be about like the end of civilization. But I can also give you things right now that will improve the lives of West Virginians. By Manchin's own admission, people are moving slowly away from coal. Okay, if West Virginia doesn't, if their senator doesn't decide to back the investment in a transition to a new technology and an expediting of that new technology. One, the pollution it creates is killing people. And I'm not saying by like slowly cooking them to death. I mean, like fine particulate matter that comes out of these things causes spontaneous abortions, causes cancer. A lot of people are being killed like now, not by the weather, right now by his coal plants. And also they're gonna starve to death because there aren't going to be those jobs by his own admissions. And so we need him to help his people by giving them jobs for the future. That's it.
Yeah. And that is something that is within our power. And it would be to his constituents' economic benefit. It would be to his state's economic benefit. It would be to the country's economic benefit. But none of that matters when weighed against his own personal economic benefit. And he is doing just fine right now. By the way, after that confrontation, he went on CNN and said that the Senate is a hostile working environment.
Which is insane.
Shut the hell up.
Like,
by the way,
I'm shocked to find out that there's competition in the Senate. Mm-hmm. If that was a good argument, I'd be fine with it. It's like, you know what, these people, you know, that versions of that argument have existed forever. Like, why is the Senate such a confrontational place? The solution to that argument is to say, so instead of us fighting for our own reelection and our own partisan bickering, why don't we take a step back? And just look at the polling, at what most people want, at what most West Virginians want. That's the way around this. Let's do a most Americans agree agenda where we just vote for the stuff that most Americans want.
100%. I like it. Let's work on that. Okay, we might be moving towards actual votes today. So we are gonna take a short break. When we come back, we'll be breaking that down, what we can potentially expect, if we can expect anything. We'll get to that after this. Okay, you ready to talk about some, everybody calm down, calm down. We're gonna talk about the infrastructure bills, but we have to. There was a time once when we didn't used to do that every day, and perhaps that time will come again, but not now. Supposedly, at some point today, the Democrats will be at least attempting to vote on infrastructure, which all of it, I think, all of it, they're gonna try to set up the dual track thing. They're going to vote on both. The issue being, of course, that even if the House approves of the reconciliation bill, the Senate is almost certainly going to make changes to it, which means that if these votes do happen, and at this point we don't know for sure that they will, that is not the end of the process. Whatever changes they make would then have to go back to the House. They could approve of it or they could not. It could break down at any point along this. But one thing that might stop it from even starting is that several moderates were pushing for more information about the cost of the plan, including a nonpartisan analysis from the Congressional Budget Office. But Representative Steny Hoyer of Maryland, the majority leader, said the cost estimate would not be ready by the end of the day. And a person familiar with the discussion said a score from the budget office was weeks away from completion. So what they're saying there is they can't vote on it unless they know exactly the effect it's going to have, because they are genuinely worried about the deficit. They're genuinely worried in a way that they weren't when they found out that their bipartisan bill would add like $250 billion to the deficit, and they didn't care and they're still totally fine with it. But I will get to in a little bit what might be in some of these bills with the newest version of them, Brett. But I don't know, from where you're sitting, you think this is happening today?
Yeah, sure, why not?
Why not?
Why not? It can happen today. Well, if it doesn't happen, or if it does happen, you can tune into the Young Turks, where Representative Ro Khanna is scheduled to talk to Cenk about it. So that's happening at around 3:15 Pacific, 6:15 PM Eastern. I trust them when they think it's going along, because they said that they had the votes. They say they're going to do it. And we'll see. Now, it is worth saying that, like, not all votes are equal here. The bipartisan infrastructure bill, the BIF bill, is already passed the Senate. So once it's signed, but once it's voted on by the House, it goes directly to Biden's desk to become a law. Once the Build Back Better agenda, the budget reconciliation bill, is passed by the House, it goes to the Senate to see whatever the hell they want to do about it. So this is not what people were talking about. They said they wanted it to pass the Senate. They wanted the bipartisan or the budget bill to pass the Senate before it. They both went to the president's desk to sign, because they're all theoretically part of the Build Back Better agenda. One thing that is important that we remember is that they don't even have a promise from, like, Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin that they're going to vote for this. There's
I'm on the record thing.
Like, Manchin said, I'm not sure I'm going to do. I don't know. I got to drive my Maserati through some kids.
Yeah. Well, and he's been giving many, many signals that he cannot be. I mean, he's been talking about the need to slow this down for a long time. So we're supposed to believe that he won't do that?
Like, if the guy can drive a Maserati at 2 miles an hour, imagine how slow he can make a budget reconciliation bill go.
Yeah. What a waste of a car on him, even a Maserati. Anyway, so I want to throw out a little bit more, just to get your blood boiling on a Friday, before we head into what's in the bipartisan bill, the BIF. It's a real BIF tannin of a bill. So the House Democrats put family leave back into the bill, which is good news, except it also exists in the same timeline that Joe Manchin's not going to allow it. So he had some stuff to say about the family leave component. He said people should be able to have family leave as they need it, but also we should be paying into it from same as we do Social Security. It's employer-employee participation. So you should pay for it. That's what he means. So it's paid leave in the same way that if I take money out of my wallet and put it in my pocket, I've given myself a loan. I don't know. Anyway, he says, I believe in family leave. I believe people should have an opportunity. Can't we find a better position for this and do this in a bipartisan and a process that works? So what he means there is, I totally want it, except it's not really paid for by them. It's paid for by you. And let's not do it now when it can actually pass via reconciliation. Let's try to pass it through the normal legislative process. Brett, if you had to guess, what are the chances that paid family leave of any variety, even this fake variety, could pass through the normal legislative process in the Senate?
Let's not take the path that communicates to America that we understand what they want, and we will pass the thing they want. Let's take the other path. This is, I don't know if you've seen that Geico commercial where there's, like, the killer and it's like a horror movie. They play it every Halloween.
Yeah.
Where there's a bunch of scared kids and one goes, why don't we just get in the moving car? And they look at her and go, are you crazy? Let's hide behind the chainsaws.
Yes.
The progressives are saying, let's get in the running car.
Yeah.
And Manchin and Sinema, Manchin specifically in this case, is saying, let's hide behind the chainsaws. Let's go cozy up with Mitch McConnell, who is the serial killer of bills. He said it himself. And let him kill this bill with the variety of chainsaws behind which we will be crouching. And let's just tie ourselves up in the meantime.
Yep, 100%. That's all it is. He wants to kill it. And perhaps that is the path we're on today, not just for family leave, but for literally everything. By the way, he goes on to say, and Marco Rubio said the same thing recently on Twitter, when you start the programs, you never stop them. You just don't. My follow-up question would be, why? Why is it that once something is actually delivered to the American people, you find it so difficult to stop it?
Does it have something to do with what the people want and the strike back that you would face if you were to do that? So he's admitting there how popular it is. All of his other commentary about this is denying that that's true, but that completely busts apart that argument.
Right. Paid family leave, when you break apart the polling, people want it, right? And when you go even further, and I'm all about giving people what they want, right? Especially when it's something that's clearly explained to them. They go, I want my company to provide it. And a smaller number of people say, I want the federal government to provide it or the state government to provide it. Mm-hmm. So let's do that. We can do it so that you mandate that a certain level of size for a corporation provides paid family leave or pays a fine that can fund it. Or if it's a smaller company, then we have a federal program or a state by state program, but I would suggest a federal program that allows people to get off so that they can spend time with their kids.
I agree. Really fast, I just want to throw out just a few things because I'm honestly looking for any crumbs. And again, bearing in mind that it doesn't seem like we're going to have this by the end of today, we're just going to roll through this. What's in the bipartisan bill? Well, there's about $110 billion that'll go to roads, bridges, and transportation programs, which sounds like a lot. And I guess in absolute terms, it is a lot. Bear in mind, though, that the American Society of Civil Engineers estimates that you would need nearly $800 billion just for roads and bridges to get them up to snuff. You've got $73 billion to modernize the nation's electric grid, some stuff for public transport and vehicle stations, a very small amount for vehicle stations there. Funding to address Amtrak's maintenance backlog. When we elected Biden, that was the only thing guaranteed to get money, was going to be Amtrak. Money for the Forest Service to get rid of flammable vegetation. No word yet on how many rakes they're going to buy. And $65 billion that's going to go to connecting hard to reach rural communities to high speed internet and help sign up low income city dwellers who cannot afford it. And that's like my favorite little bit there. So $65 billion, a lot of it going to rural, probably a lot of conservative Americans, so they finally have access to the internet. Mr. Biden had initially proposed $100 billion, but he agreed to lower the price to strike a compromise with Republicans. And one thing that I can guarantee you will never have to see in an ad is a Republican arguing to their rural constituents, I got $35 billion less to sign you up to the internet and let you catch up to the rest of the country. It's just amazing that their advocacy is to screw over their constituents and to leave them behind. Don't they need high speed internet for Fox Nation or whatever? But no, screwed over. And that's just one tiny little bit. It's riven throughout this entire thing is stuff like that. But you will never hear that focused on again. Anyway, with that, why don't we move on to the reason for so many of these issues. There has been so much dirty money flowing into politicians to cause them to create these roadblocks, these obstacles to the infrastructure bill. And we want to break down a few different forms that that's come in. It is just all throughout the agenda of Joe Biden, including, by the way, on the recent troubles in getting some sort of voting rights bill passed. So the Accountable.us watchdog group, they have tracked down and identified 8 major corporations that signed a letter back in July calling for the passage of the John Lewis Voting Rights Act. Well, that sounds great, right? Well, they haven't exactly put their money where their bics were because they've collectively donated $164,500 to GOP senators who all but one voted to not allow debate on this measure. The companies include household names like Amazon, Dell, and Facebook. So Amazon, Dell, and Facebook were totally in favor of democracy and all that, but they threw their money into people who not only have filibustered every single voting rights bill, but were obviously always going to filibuster every single voting rights bill. And so why did they do it? Well, it makes them look good temporarily when they write things like, we need federal protections to safeguard this fundamental right for all Americans. And let me write out a check to like Thune or whatever. Last Congress, House of Representatives passed the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act. We support the ongoing work. Okay, here's a check to Mitch McConnell. I'm gonna, oh, Ted Cruz, you need some money? Okay, there you go, bada boom. And that's what they did, Brett. So they say one thing, but their money goes in the opposite direction.
Yes, politics is discourse in the service of power. And so they select their discourse in a way that will allow them to achieve more power. And we are all familiar with this, where they want to be in the news saying we support voting rights because it makes them feel good and stuff. But they still need a whole bunch of other things to happen and they don't want to alienate some folks that might be in power someday. So they pay those people large amounts of money in order to have their ear and hold their ear.
Yep.
That's it. And most of these companies are fine with any kind of lip service. And most politicians are happy with giving lip service to the American people and making them feel like their best interests are being held near and dear. And in all fairness, most politicians right now, when we look at the bipartisan infrastructure bill and specifically also the budget bill, like 96% of Democrats are for all the things we've listed. Mm-hmm. It's just a few holdouts. And so because of, but when it comes down to it, most of these companies they're fine. They're happy too. And a lot of their PR people and the folks that run them that live in major cities and in very blue states are fine with supporting a lot of the culture issues and in rights issues, except when it comes to if that would translate to those corporations paying their fair share in taxes and the individuals who make a lot of money in them paying their fair share in taxes. Yeah. It's why you see even when the Republicans are in power, the only thing they pass is judges in the approval process and to help with regulations for businesses. And then they also pass a new tax code that allows the rich to pay less.
Yep. And while this was filibustered, I will remind you, as I always have, those two things that Brett just identified cannot be filibustered. Both of them can be, well, there's a carve out for judges and they can fit in their tax cuts into reconciliation. So when you are told to fear what the right wing would do with no filibuster, understand that they already don't have a filibuster for the only things they care about. By the way, I want to give you examples of a couple of these things. So Dell Technologies, whose founder Michael Dell has spoken out against proposed voting restrictions, donated $38,500, you can buy half a Maserati with that, to Senate Republicans since January. Amazon has donated $22,500. But look at that. How much time do they spend demonizing Bezos and Amazon? And he's still shoveling money at them. Why is that? Is it possible that what both of them are saying publicly don't actually represent their interests? Perhaps. Facebook has donated $26,500 to Senate Republican reelection campaigns. How is that legal that Facebook? Like, if you took $26,500, put it in a burlap sack, and scrawled a dollar sign on it with a Sharpie, they would throw you in jail for the rest of your life. But if you send it via the regular, you know, the avenues, that's perfectly fine. And you know what's so amazing about this is, and makes it to me even more clearly bribery, is virtually every single one of these politicians is a multi-multi-millionaire. They could afford to pay for their campaigns if they wanted to. They don't have to when they're given the money anyway. It takes the place of the money they'd have to spend. I mean, we expect if you run for state representative, you're going to be taking out loans. You're going to be asking your family, your money, the money of your social circle is going to go into that. But instead, they get it replaced by others. But you shouldn't call it a bribe. Facebook didn't hand over that money to protect themselves or their interests to stop tax cuts or stop tax increases from happening. Amazon has no interests economically in this. They just love democracy and want to be a part of the process. But we stupidly, as a people, allow this to happen. We are totally fine with bribes like this that are having obvious effects on the passage of certain types of legislation and the blocking of others.
Yep.
There is other corruption as well, by the way. So Senator Kyrsten Sinema, I saw this tweet going around, this is a fun one. Collecting money from firms opposed to Democrats' major labor bill. Again, collecting money, not being bribed. But anyway, a lot of the MLM, the was it multi-level marketing? Multi-level marketing, right? Those companies are very much invested in this whole process. So the Political Action Committee associated with AltaCorp, the parent entity of the health, home, and beauty company Amway, gave $2,500 to Kyrsten Sinema back in late June, as did the PAC for Isagenix, I think it is, an Arizona-based business that sells nutrition, wellness, and personal care products. By the way, my producer makes a note that AltaCorp is actually owned by the DeVos family. That's a nice little crossover. That's a bold crossover hit. Nu Skin Enterprises, another personal care and beauty company, gave $2,500 to her, as did blah, 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 and blah, 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 tons of them. And what's amazing, Sinema is the only federal lawmaker that Isagenix and Nu Skin PACs have given to this year. Well, why her in particular? Is it because you only need one no vote on certain things? Is it because, man, we've identified a way to say, like, they already buy these people so cheap, but now they only need to buy one?
It's like a not the onion. These are pyramid schemes. This is the only reason that Herbalife has herbs affiliated with it is because otherwise it would literally just be a pyramid scheme. But the whole thing, these are companies that the only way they work is if you keep signing people up for it. There's documentaries about it, about how these are just straight up scams. And there is no person in Congress who, besides Marjorie Taylor Greene and maybe Lauren Boebert, who I would be more like, if you told me they were doing it, I would say absolutely 100%, than Kyrsten Sinema. She would post, you can see on her Instagram, her like, I'm a girl boss and here's my moisturizing routine. And if you buy 5 samples, it's just samples, you can join this amazing team to market to more and more people. But that's it. And that encapsulates who she is as a person. Someone who's always selling you on some BS version of her that isn't true, because the only thing true about her is she's willing to sell based on whatever person paid her to sell some BS version of herself.
You're exactly right. And by the way, let's talk about why. So as I was saying, why are they doing this? Producer Sophie was bolding and enlarging the reference to the PRO Act in our document. So yeah, I'll talk about it. I was gonna talk about it. The companies face an existential threat from the PRO Act, which would make it more difficult to classify workers as independent contractors. According to one industry source, the bill has become the driving issue since Democrats took control of the White House and both chambers of Congress, and Sinema is one of, if not the only, Democratic allies in the Senate. So what's interesting about that is, generally, when you think about the PRO Act and the opposition to these sorts of pieces of legislation, trying to make sure that you can keep independent contractors as part of your business model, you think of things like Uber, Lyft, Grubhub, all those sorts of things. But apparently it's actually pretty big in these MLM people as well. I mean, they are functionally employees for these companies, but they're also pitched as being independent entrepreneurs, even though they're all working for this one company. So sure, why wouldn't they throw some of the huge amounts of money that they have into this? And it's so, but like, think about it. We're not talking about millions of dollars. They're giving $2,500. That's it. There's a few of them, sure. That's nothing. That's like no money whatsoever. But you don't think that that's enough to get Kyrsten Sinema to do what you want?
Dude, there's nothing more telling than the fact that what she does, what she teaches at Arizona State University, is fundraising.
Is fundraising.
That's it.
Yeah.
She's a fundraiser and she goes where the money is because it funds whatever operation she's into. Yeah. Period.
Yeah.
Crazy.
From her Instagram, you get the impression she's a fundraiser. Oh, I've got a ring and I'm drinking wine and everything. But no, it's mostly the funds at the end of the day. Okay, we're going to take our second. Yes to rosé, no to your wages. Anyway, oh, it's Friday. Okay, we're going to take our second break. We come back. Cops have been horrible. People working in prisons have been horrible. And we're going to break that down after this. Okay, everybody, with that, let's jump back into some of the worst news. People working in prisons and cops using their power to abuse and harm those they're supposed to be protecting and serving. This is hardly going to be the first time we're going to be revealing these sorts of things to you, but we noticed a couple of these stories and we want to make sure that you know what's going on. So one is a little bit lighter, if still horrible, than the other. So buckle up. In the first case, you have 3 former inmates that had been jailed in Oklahoma, saying that the people working there tortured them with a viral children's song. They're seeking $75,000 for being forced to listen to it for hours while handcuffed. That song, you guessed it, Baby Shark. The viral song, beloved by toddlers, was used to torture prisoners there. They had been, they're now suing those who managed the prison at that time. So thankfully, apparently, the people who did that don't work there anymore. These 3 individuals, Daniel Hedrick, Joseph Mitchell, and John Basco, Those are the people that were being held there, are filing for $75,000 in damages from the sheriff and the commissioners there. They say they were handcuffed and forced to stand against a wall for hours back in 2019 while Baby Shark was played on loop at a high volume via a computer in the next room. A clinical psychologist says that songs like Baby Shark can elicit a painful reaction in the brain because they have high-pitched tones and screechy sounds that hurt one's ears. And look, this is the first time I've heard of a story like this of where they've used Baby Shark specifically, but using loud music as effectively a form of torture to just irritate a person or stop them from being able to sleep. That is certainly something we've seen before, Brett.
Can we go back to graphic four, please? I just want to bring the name of this clinical psychologist is John Mayer. Mm-hmm. Which I want to pretend that's the actual John Mayer.
I think he's mad that this other song got so many views.
Nobody should be listening to those other songs. Surprises the world alone.
Is that what he sounds like? That's there's strong Meat Wad vibes to that to me.
Oh, he's doing a, if Meat Wad had a baby with Dave Matthews, is how.
Man, that's crazy.
Like the how, what it sounds like when John Mayer sings.
This is a serious story. And it's about
with
to get more
Baby Shark in it. Okay, so here's what they should do in this civil suit. Or I don't know, whatever it is, however they're suing it, they should have just the entire opening statement should be Baby Shark playing for as long and as repetitively as it played for the victim in this case.
And make the jurors go through it so they understand the pain.
Yeah.
That would be pretty effective. It would also unfortunately be torture.
This is absolutely, this is actually torture. This is one of the torture techniques that has been used. Yeah. Since time in memoriam, as soon as they got a speaker set up, they were playing annoying songs at people super loud over and over again. This is like Guantanamo Bay, CIA interrogation technique 101. You can't do this. This is stuff that they F Martinez is a song that they would play over and over to us when we were like rushing a frat. When we were like in that pledge period or whatever, it was intentionally torture. It was horrible. Yeah. A lot of us just walked out. We still got in, but like it was horrible.
Well, you're lucky that at that point, Baby Shark had not yet come out. Mm-hmm. Now, I want to get into even more explicit abuse of power and violence. This time happening in Edmonton, Alberta in Canada. It involves Pacey Dumas, a 19-year-old who is now suing the police force in that area. After being kicked in the head by a police officer, he now has to wear a helmet whenever he walks outside to protect the spot where his brain is only shielded by skin and hair. The hole in his skull is the same size as a tennis ball. And you can see a shot of the immediate recovery from this horrible injury there. His family is now suing the Edmonton Police Service and several individual officers, including Chief Dale McPhee. So the incident started back on December 9th of last year. Edmonton police say that they responded to a call about a fight inside a home involving a suspected weapon. A statement said an 18-year-old male exited the home, quote, at which time a confrontation ensued. Physical force was applied to gain control of the male. And I just never forget how much they can hide in these little reports with phrases like that. Anyway, the family claims that that didn't happen. There was no weapon and the mother let the police into the house without resistance. So what the police are saying hides what really happened, and it might have been a completely inaccurate representation of what was really going on anyway. Now, he was eventually sent to the University of Alberta Hospital, and doctors decided they had to cut out a chunk of his skull to alleviate pressure from his swelling brain. He spent 9 days in hospital, and since then, he says he's suffering from depression, anxiety, and sleeplessness. His ear has been marked by an infection in the incision in his head, severe headaches, as well as temporary neurological impairments, including slurred speech. He wants $400,000, and there's more to the lawsuit there, but that is life-changing, that injury that the cop levied against him.
Yep. There is a video that went around recently where a police officer is confronted by someone and they're talking back and forth. And the guy's like, you want me to do all this stuff, but this is a public place and I know my rights. And then afterwards, that police officer forgot to turn off his body camera. And the person who originally posted the confrontation video found it and posted it. And in it, the police officer says, 5 years ago, we wouldn't be able to get away with this stuff. or 5 years ago, we would that would be the end of that guy. Because now you can't get away with that stuff because of body cameras. Ironically, it was caught on a body camera. It is our job as people and as everyone can be an activist to raise awareness about stuff like this happening so that it doesn't happen anymore. For police officers, like they shouldn't be able to do this kind of stuff, obviously. But they can because they got a badge, the same way some of the, you know, they say they're not supposed to do it, but they turn on the siren to run a red light. They take advantage of this place of power that they have. It's incumbent upon everybody to call it out when they see it. And this is obviously unacceptable. And the crappy little wording in the report is a very official seeming way to justify yourself for an unjustifiable action.
100%. Yeah. Yeah. And look, this is happening in Canada, but obviously we have things like this all the time. They need to suffer legal ramifications, and the financial ramifications need to be enough pressure that it causes them to reform. It doesn't seem like that's happening so far. Okay, we're gonna jump ahead just a little bit to a story that I think we can fit in what remains. Let's jump into this. Host Tucker Carlson apparently had a sort of medical emergency that has led to, in his words, causing him to rethink the opioid crisis. So apparently back on Monday morning, something happened that caused him to have emergency back surgery. He says it was one of the most traumatic things that's ever happened to me in my whole life ever. And he says that since he was treated with intravenous fentanyl and other powerful painkillers, he now understands America's opioid crisis in a deeper way. That, absent any other details, is plausible. Going through that could change your views. We're gonna evaluate the immediate evidence of whether that's happened or not. We'll be watching for it in the future. But he says, I didn't sleep literally 1 second last night, and I was on so many effing drugs. It was just like more drugs, more drugs. I didn't know that there was untreatable pain. He is a full grown adult, and he didn't understand that there is some pain that even painkillers can't dull. You have to be really sheltered from the world to not understand that. But okay, he's trying to learn. He's trying to learn. He says he'll never take opioids again. Good, that's a sign of change. He says, I had this spirit of fear within me, which I don't have. I'm not bragging, I don't have it. And I think you can feel it. I don't have it. I think that's why I'm successful, because I'm just not afraid. I felt afraid just of like life or something. It's interesting. Okay, but last night I was like, OS, fear, just like anxiety. People who have anxiety, that's what I felt. And it was from those drugs. And they extinguish the spirit within you. And they make you feel like you're running away, you're hiding. It's so effing deep. I'm lying in bed, filthy with dog toys on my pillow, and it doesn't bother me. And I'm not that way. Now it's gonna get a little bit weirder, but so far, what do you think? Does he seem to have understood the human condition a bit more?
No, this is a guy who during the Olympics can't watch the hurdles because he doesn't understand obstacles. He's like, I don't get it. I've never encountered one in my entire damn life. And the one time he does, he's just like, oh wow, obstacles are difficult. And he doesn't, and the idea that he doesn't have a spirit of fear, but he relies on it all the time, every day, in every broadcast he does. All he does is stoke fear, whether he has or he's never had to have it because he's never encountered adversity. The only time he encountered a modicum of adversity was when he got fired from a job or two because he got called out by someone who was right.
But why would he fear that? He could never work a day in his life and be richer than you and I combined will ever be. So yeah, you don't have a spirit of fear because what could you possibly fear? Other than like weird dead face syndrome. But anyway, so he talked to his associates about this and he said, I said this to an associate and he had such a deep response. Okay, so here's the major piece of the evidence of what he's taking away from this. And it's being routed through his associate, but he goes, that's why all the houses in Maine are unclean and have toys on the front lawn, because the people are on fentanyl, they're on opioids, and they've lost their dignity, their self-respect. The thing that makes you super uptight when you look at your house and you're like, ah, the shutters need painting. F, maybe you paint them or maybe you don't, but it bothers you because you have dignity. That's gone. So you're like, oh, there's a half chewed rawhide toy on my pillow. Okay, lie there with it. I don't live like that. Have you ever been to my house? We're not crazy, but we're orderly people because we have self-respect.
This does nothing to help anyone the way that he's doing this. I love it. It's like, oh, you know how I'm gonna, like, houses in Maine are dirty. So, you know, it's Chewbacca's a Wookiee. Like, this belittles people who have opioid addiction. This belittles all the people who, as a result of folks trying to find common sense legislation and paths to help those who do have addictions, but incidentally denies actual pain medication to people who need it. And sometimes opioids are unavailable to people because we don't think they're trying to find the right balance of it. This is Tucker Carlson being like, thinking he really understands people because he saw a movie about it, basically. Like, this is not it. What you had, and then also folks who feel actual pain that isn't biologically happening in their body because the way that they've been conditioned after the opioids got them through the actual pain is telling their body, no, you still need opioids, so you're in a lot of pain. All of these things are happening. None of them are a priority in terms of understanding them for Tucker Carlson.
Thank you. Okay. Unfortunately, that is all the time that we're gonna, great commentary there, just at a bad time. Anyway, so that's all the time we have, but we do have more news coming. So if you're watching on Twitch or on YouTube or on a members app, there is more coming. We're gonna take a couple minute break, but then we'll be back after this.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.